Welcome back to our final segment of the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Dr. Rex Cowdery, Executive Director of the Maryland Healthcare Commission. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Tom Romeo. Rex, today about 97% of the $2 trillion the U.S. healthcare budget is spent on disease management. There seems to be a shift in emphasis in the way the American healthcare is administered from disease management to prevention. From your perspective, what's the value of implementing wellness and preventative care programs?
Well, I think it's relatively clear that those are the great challenges, and they require an integrated program to deliver. I mean, having a one-minute conversation with the doctor about smoking cessation just isn't going to do the trick unless you're there already, and that's merely the, you know, the straw, as it were. Same thing with weight loss. I mean, these are the huge public health problems that we face, these chronic risk factors that depend so much on people's lifestyles. So we've had this bizarre situation where for a certain segment of the population, lifestyles have become healthier. More people are out exercising and outdoors and whatnot. And then for a substantial part of the population, lifestyles are actually getting unhealthier. The level of obesity is increasing. And we know that that is a major risk factor for a variety of problems. So clearly part of what we have to do is a better job of wellness. That's an interesting question, whose responsibility that is. Because, you know, at some level, of course, it's the individual's responsibility. But businesses have increasingly recognized that they can improve productivity and the wellness and reduce absenteeism and presenteeism, which I think is sort of a great term in itself, by engaging people in improving their health care. So large businesses actually, I think, have been in the forefront of this kind of development. Some of them can build incentives into that. I mean, I know, ironically, that one of our major insurers in Maryland had one of these Biggest Loser contests with a flat screen, you know, TV as sort of the reward for being the biggest loser. They condition on being, you know, sort of informal Fridays on actually going to the gym. If you come in an informal, you know, sort of gym wear, you go to the gym. So building in those sort of incentives into this program is so crucial to help people do what at some level they know is the right thing, but it's sort of a pain to change habits. So I think there's tremendous value in that. Preventive care as well. But the problem is, you know, once again, some preventive care is incredibly valuable. Other preventive care, like these whole body MRIs or CT scans, are the devil's work because they increase healthcare costs dramatically without a payoff. There's incredibly valuable preventive care, like immunizations, and there is expensive preventive care that doesn't deliver value. So like anything else, just like in therapy, there's high and low value in preventive care there is as well. So again, Incentives.
Incentives, and we're back to this value equation.
That's exactly right.
And in any part of that equation, obviously the consumer plays an important role. So educating the consumer is critical. What do you see the role of social networking technologies like blogs and wikis playing in communicating and informing consumers on their healthcare choices?
Boy, I have mixed feelings, from incredibly enthusiastic to incredibly wary about that. And it partially depends on what we're using them for. It is, on the one hand, an incredibly positive sign that health issues and diseases and illness and wellness and medications are, what, the second or third most searched item on the internet, and we won't go where the first most searched item is. So that's a positive sign. But on the other hand, like everything else, there's all sorts of information out there. And the worst thing for providers is to have someone come in with this thing they printed out from some site with a strange, you know, sort of domain name to it that is just unreliable or false. So how do you deliver reliable information to inform people's choices, I think, is crucial. You got to have trusted providers. That's one of the problems with blogs and wikis and that sort of thing is the information reliable? Can you count on it? But the positive part of it, of course, is social network support is crucial to changing behavior, to losing weight, or to making other behavioral changes. There are ways in which that kind of social support can be incredibly valuable. So, you know, like all tools, like atomic energy, you know, it has its hugely valuable side, and then it's a certain risk.
So, Rex, I talk with many of my guests about collaboration. Could you tell us about the importance of collaboration within your efforts, and what kinds of partnerships have you developed, and how might these partnerships change over time?
You have an interesting relationship with sort of a variety of partners. I mean, obviously on the health policy side with the administration, with the General Assembly, but I think I'd like to talk mostly about partnerships with providers because they're the most interesting. We believe that the best reporting and the best policies come out of collaborative work. So we tend to, when we have an issue like cardiac care in Maryland and how will it be structured and, you know, should we increase the number of cardiac surgery sites or whatnot? What are the guidelines? What are the guidelines for emergency angioplasty programs? We tend to call together technical advisory groups of people who know the business and are from Maryland and out-of-state providers to guide us in developing this. And that is invaluable to building acceptance for what eventually comes out of the process. But then what's on the other end of the process is often regulatory. So then we're in a slightly different relationship. It's still a partnership, but it's a partnership with a power of regulation behind it. It's very interesting. I think it actually works well like that. Let me give you one quick example. Emergency angioplasty, or so-called primary angioplasty. We know that for particular patients who are having blockage of their coronary arteries with particular sets of EKG changes, the sooner you get them onto the table and their artery opened up, the more likely they are to survive and do well. Yeah, there's a clear relationship to time. Right now, the standard, I mean, it was 120 minutes, now it's 90 minutes, from the door of the hospital to actually having that artery opened up. It requires a hospital to really rework how it does everything, accustomed ways of providing care, the long wait for the laboratory result to come back. Do you have to wait until it's established before you call in the team? All these things have to change. The whole social system has to change. So how do you incentivize that kind of change that they know they have to do? The data are clear that outcomes are better. Well, we do it through, because we have the power to essentially license, it's actually a certificate of need, these programs. We say, this is fine, you have this, but you have to meet these performance standards. And we've had two programs actually drop out because of not meeting the performance standards. And in the others, we've seen this dramatic decrease in door-to-balloon time. So it's sort of the incentive of regulation there. And the threat of losing the right to do this, coupled with extraordinary collaborative efforts to improve door-to-balloon times. These hospitals sharing with one another their techniques for, you know, stopwatches on the stretcher or whatever, early alerts from the incoming EMS team. I mean, all these things that change the outcome for you and me if we ended up with a heart attack at the front door of a hospital.
That's great. That's fantastic. Rex, I'd like to transition now to the future. Could you give us a sense of some of the key issues that will be faced by the Maryland Healthcare Commission over the next, let's say, several years?
Well, we could return back to our familiar triad, but I think the biggest challenge that we are going to face is a combination of access. I think the next few years, regardless of who's elected in November, are going to see a push for changes in the way we finance and organize healthcare. And we can do that smart or we can do that not so smart. I think that states are going to be involved in that process. Obviously, some states have already done major initiatives in that regard. So that whole question of how to expand coverage to people who are uninsured and to do it at a reasonable cost. So that's the second challenge. How do you work with payers and providers to extract better value out of what we provide? And at the same time, we hope, make providers' lives more pleasant. One of the most disturbing things has been the rising voices of our physician community who say, I don't like this life. I don't like the reimbursement. I don't like the paperwork. This is not the profession I went into. So I think one of our challenges in re-engineering the whole system is sort of figuring out how to operate more efficiently, but also how to make the, first and foremost, the patient's experience better, but frankly also the provider's experience better, because I think there's broad dissatisfaction currently.
So Rex, you've had a very interesting and a very successful vocation within medicine and obviously as a public servant. So what advice would you give to someone who's out there perhaps thinking about a career in medicine, perhaps a career in public service, or perhaps both?
Interesting, yes. Successful, there are days I wonder about that. But it's fashionable to sort of say, don't go into medicine because it's just become a headache. And doctors frequently say that. I would say, make it different. And I think we can. And I think it is among the most rewarding of professions to go into because you have a unique relationship with people and you can bring your expertise to bear in a way that is of direct benefit. So I would say don't let the passing frustrations that we're going through in our healthcare system deter someone from going into that as a profession because it's a wonderful profession. Same thing's true of public service. You know, I've been a public servant basically all of my life. It's given me great opportunities. And at the end of the day, I think you can say you're there to try to make a difference for your fellow citizens. So I would say go for it.
That's wonderful advice. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we've reached the end of our time now. Tom and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to our country, as well as now the state of Maryland.
Thank you so much. Listeners might be interested in other information about our program. Small businesses might be interested in information about the health insurance partnership. That can all be found at our website, which is MHCC, for Maryland Healthcare Commission, .maryland.gov.
Excellent. Thank you. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Dr. Rex Cowdery, Executive Director of the Maryland Healthcare Commission. My co-host has been Tom Romeo, IBM's General Government Industry Leader. As you enjoy the rest of your day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who can't hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.